Warning, Star Trek From the Holodeck contains adult language and discussions. If you're easily offended, do not continue to listen.
Lock it alone!
Fire.
Holodeck 3 program is reinstated.
Open sesame!
Commander Klingon vessel, we are energizing transporter beam. Now.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Star Trek From the Holodeck, the Discovery Edition. I am Michael Flores, your host, and in the studio, in the, not the captain's seat, he's definitely at the helm. He's Ensign David Sabal. Hello, Dave.
Hello, Captain.
All right, so today we're going to be discussing and breaking down Star Trek Discovery, episode 12 of season 2, titled Through the Valley of Shadows. And holy shit. Do we have an episode to break down today, Dave? There is so much, so much. It took me about 3.5 hours to compile all the notes because there's just so much substance in this episode. There's so much subtext to dissect and sort through to figure out exactly what they're saying. And that's what's so totally fucking great about this season of Star Trek is that it's not just the obvious that they're working on. They're working on so much of the unsaid. And as we always say, the subtext is always, not always, but usually just as important as what's overtly being stated.
Yes. The substance that they've been able to add in season two compared to season one, man, they've gone from leaps and bounds with the narrative and the substance. I'm just surprised that we haven't, I'm gonna knock on wood,
yeah,
we haven't had a bad episode this season.
We haven't, Dave. And at this point last year we were already starting to groan.
Yeah.
And we have two episodes left. I think it's time to just say, hey, you know what, we are confident in this writing team this year. They have complete control of the show. They know exactly what they want to do, and there's no reason to worry anymore. Because this is Star Trek in its finest form. This might be one of the best seasons of Star Trek that we've had since the later seasons of Deep Space Nine. Yeah, Dave, I'm going to say it. Since the greatness of the later seasons of Deep Space Nine. All right, so the synopsis, Dave, for this week's episode. A fourth signal leads the USS Discovery to an insular world where Pike is forced to make a life-changing choice. Burnham and Spock investigate a Section 31 ship gone rogue, leading to a discovery with catastrophic consequences. Now, the episode was directed by one of our favorites.
Favorites?
What was that? What language is that? Am I turning to an alien species?
Maybe you were actually trying to actually turn into Klingon there for a second.
maybe that's what it was. One of our favorite directors, Douglas Arniokoski, and written by Bo-Yeon Kim and Erica Leopold. These three are the same people that worked on some of our favorite episodes of the year thus far. Okay, so every time, Dave, like I was saying, every time I think, okay, that was the climax, you're not going to wow me again this year like you did in the previous episode. And Dave, they prove me wrong every single time. I feel like we should have complete trust because they are obviously on their A game this season. And when you get writers like Bo-Yeon Kim and Erica Leopold and pair them up with Douglas, you're going to get something really great. This is the group that brought us the Short Treks episode Brightest Star. This season's The Sound of Thunder. There's a very strong theme or statement just below the surface of all of their episodes. You can never take it as simply face value. There's something a lot deeper within all of their episodes, and it keeps everything together. And that theme this week was possibly the acceptance of destiny and the reluctance to accept one's fate.
Yes.
And we're going to get into that later when we break down the philosophical aspects of the episode, because there was a lot. I mean, this team, Dave, the three of these people, Douglas, Bo-Yeon Kim, and Erica Leopold, this team are the ones to watch. They are fucking good. Not just capable, really good. And that's why I'm, dude, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe this is the team that is working on Section 31.
Yes.
Erica and Bo-Yeon Kim are the showrunners for the Section 31 spinoff. And Douglas, if you go to his IMDb, he is producing untitled Star Trek TV show. That's what it says on IMDb.
Because they haven't come out with the name for the Section 31 series yet.
Right. So that could either be the Picard series or the Section 31 series. Either way, dude, it's good to know that this guy's future is connected to Star Trek, because he knows how to take everything on that page and really transcribe it over very well.
And it makes sense if it were to be Section 31, because he would have in-depth knowledge of where they're going with Section 31 up to this point. Because just like what you said, his fingerprint is all over this second season. And I'd be kind of surprised if it wasn't Section 31, although him on the Picard show could be really good too. But I honestly think just how the dominoes are going to be falling, how destiny falls for him at Section 31.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, another exciting moment was how Control is slowly becoming the Borg. I find it hard. Dave, I find it hard to believe at this point that it can be anything other than that. Now, don't get me wrong. If they go another direction and it works, then that is just fine. But as of right now, can it really be anything else? No.
I mean, think
about it. Spock mentioned nanobots. The way the AI was speaking through Gant this week, the effect was awfully similar to how the Borg speak.
Yeah. The only difference that I saw is I don't think the nanobots can move. Correct me if I'm wrong. All the times we've seen the Borg, we've never seen the nanobots move outside of its host.
Well, this could be a product of the fact that it's not a cybernetic organism yet.
Yes. That's what I was like thinking is like, okay, maybe it's not a cybernetic. And it says a lot if like the AI says, this is the way we have to adapt.
Right. So looking at it for what we have been given so far, right? There really are three choices at this point. They are A, misdirecting us purposely, knowing that we would think it could be the Borg, or B, the writers of the season are not aware of the Borg, and which would be ridiculous. Okay. And it's just like a coincidence, I should say. Or this is an origin story from one of the biggest Trek villains of all time. And honestly, when you look at the themes of this week, fate and or destiny, this would make sense, especially when you look at Pike's fate or destiny and how it was made manifest in the episode. They all have a part to play. Everything is connected. And it just makes sense. So there will be, I'm going to say it now as a fan, at this point, I will be slightly disappointed if it does not end up being the Borg. Seeing Pike's future was rough to witness as well.
It was dark. That was very dark.
But it brings context to the title of this week's episode, which sounds a bit biblical to me. Star Trek is not a religious show by any means, but at times it is. It can be considered spiritual.
Spiritual and philosophical.
Yes. And with that comes a form of existentialism. Let's just jump into this rather than going to a break and discussing irrelevant Star Trek news today. Well,
because there's so much, dude.
Yeah, let's just jump right into it. And I feel like this part right here, the existentialism and the potential spiritual aspects of this episode, I feel like is a great place to start. Now, I believe that the writers of Discovery have finally proven to all of those Discovery trolls out there that they're wrong. They say they don't like Trek and that they don't understand it, blah, 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 blah. That's what the trolls say about the current writers. Oh, they don't like Star Trek. They hate Star Trek. You can tell by the way they're writing it. They don't understand it. But what they did with Pike this episode is the exact opposite of what they are saying. They took a character that we've never known much about, other than that he was a former captain of the Enterprise and his fate was a dire one. But they took that fate and turned it into a form of destiny. We already knew Pike was heroic. We knew why he was left scarred and deformed. He chose to save his crew, and because of it, he was almost killed in an accident. That's all we really knew. But now they gave Pike a much bigger and better legacy. He sacrificed himself long before the event that would change his life, which reframes that pilot episode and the menagerie in a completely different way. Because imagine if he was aware. He was aware of all of these things that were going to happen. He saw his future and he embraced it. It wasn't easy, but he did. That's the embodiment of Trek philosophy. The needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few.
Yeah, especially when he's standing there, and all of us would understand at that point in the episode, even when I was watching this, all of us would understand if he said, I'm not going to take the time crystal because I don't want that fate.
I don't want it.
Yeah, no one would want that.
I would run.
I would run away. But
I would join the AI.
When he says, you are a Starfleet captain, you took an oath of sacrifice. And he starts talking about the tenets of being a captain of Starfleet.
That was powerful, man.
That was so powerful. And it basically galvanized him. And literally he says, no, I'm going to accept this. I'm going to embrace it. Give me the damn crystal.
No one says sacrifice is easy. Like, a lot of times TV shows and movies show like, yep, I got to do what I got to do. And there's no like duress. There's no stress. There's just sheer like facade of heroism in his face. I'm like, no, sacrifice is terrifying sometimes.
It's terrifying.
And because they framed that, because they framed it that way, Dave, because they showed that he was fucking terrified of his future.
Yeah.
It made it that much more important. And it made us appreciate the character of Pike that much more, because despite the fact that he was terrified of his future, what did he do? He still made the right decision.
And I give a lot of credit to the acting chops of Anson Mount.
God damn it, dude. He's so good.
The ability to actually show us that down deep inside, his character is terrified, but still he's very stoic. He still has that. We've always mentioned that Anson Mount always has this natural charisma of being stoic, a stoic character, but he's still able to show emotions that are going through his character at that moment. And dude, that one
going
scene,
through his thoughts and
going mind. Through his thoughts.
Yeah.
You could still say he's trying to be stoic as a captain, but at the same time, he's terrified. He's still a human being.
To maintain the facade of being in control.
In control.
Yeah.
And man, his acting this episode was A+.
Yeah. And because of what they did with his character, Dave, his future is that much more tragic because he knew it was coming and he faced it. He's a true hero.
Yes.
He's the embodiment of a Star Trek captain.
Captain.
What a great way to retrospectively create a deserving legacy for a character who is our very first Trek captain.
Yes.
It's fucking fantastic. There is no other way you can say it. I wouldn't even understand if people did complain about this, because you took a character who is inconsequential for the most part. Our very first captain. Meh. Who's Pike?
Meh.
Meh. And they made him vital to Star Trek canon and the Trek legacy as a whole. And I mentioned a second ago that the writers took fate and turned it into destiny. And that might sound weird to some out there, because many feel like fate and
destiny are the same thing
and destiny are interchangeable, but they're not. Now, there are various different interpretations and many philosophers have argued about the differences, but the general consensus is very simple. Or I should say the general consensus is this: fate tends to have negative connotations. Yes. Destiny has more of a positive connotations connected to it.
Yes.
So philosophers have said that fate is the life you lead if you never put yourself in the path of greatness, that your life moves without any effort on your part, that you're not in control.
That you're not in control, yes.
Destiny is your potential waiting to happen. The grand possibilities You have to be willing to take the steps needed to reach that potential. With great risk comes great reward. Now, that's a layman's attempt at quickly describing the differences, but I feel like the point has been made. Pike took his perceived fate and owned it, making it his destiny. Yes. A destiny that saves countless billions, solidifying yet again, and I'm going to say this continually, the legacy of Captain Pike.
Yeah. Essentially, it transcends the fact that he made that sacrifice for a crew. No, this sacrifice that he is making is about saving all sentient life in the universe. That's the whole point about that's the gambit of this whole second season, was the end of all sentient life. That's what Control was attempting to do.
Yeah.
Pike essentially is willing to accept everything to save all of sentient life.
Right. So in many ways, it has nothing to do with fate because he made the decision. Yes. He made the decision to intervene and take control, which is in many ways, or I should say in the eyes of many philosophers, that's the true definition of destiny.
Yes.
And dude, Erica and Bowie are amazing. And Arnie Okoski is a genius at transcribing those words over to screen. And I believe, as I said, I looked at it again on IMDb. This is the team that is working on Section 31.
Yeah.
Can you imagine, Dave, the three of these individuals working together continually on a fucking TV show?
I'd be really excited.
It's going to take 10 hours to do show notes.
But also when you take a look at it, the parallel of fate and destiny, you could see it not just with Pike choosing destiny, but Burnham's way of looking at it as fate.
Right.
Like Burnham up to this point, she has this feeling that there's nothing she can do. She's basically just flowing. Everything's floating around her and she can't stop time. So in essence, that's the way of how to look at fate. You know, fate, you cannot stop fate. Because
it's an ever-flowing stream.
It's an ever-flowing stream.
Yeah.
But on the other end, Pike kind of looks at it and says, no, I'm going to embrace it. This is my destiny.
And that may come from the maturity, you know, aspect. Pike is an older gentleman who has experienced life, and there's a sense of maturity to his decisions. Burnham obviously is struggling.
Is struggling
because, as we know from even the decisions she made last season, that she doesn't have as much life experience as, say, a seasoned captain in Starfleet. So you're absolutely right. There's also some meaning when sticking with Pike here. There's also some meaning we can derive from the chosen title this week. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me, your rod and your staff, they comfort me.
Yep.
That sounds a bit homoerotic, doesn't it? When you really break it down. Jesus, I've never said that out loud before.
Wow, that's something that Stamets would probably say.
Oh, wow. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. Give it to me.
Come on, Hugh.
I need my pain. Now, taking divinity out of the equation and using a more logically grounded aspect, because that's what this season is for the most part, this scripture can once again tie back into what we were talking about earlier in the season, and that something greater can be involved, something governing the fates and destinies of our characters, making sure things happen the way they are supposed to. I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Could this be related to the seven signals? The seven signals don't appear to be benevolent, or they do appear to be benevolent. In fact, Saru stated this as his reason for his evolution, and his change has made him a different type of captain.
Yes.
And an act that very well was intentional and made possible by the involvement of the signals.
Seven signals.
But whatever it is, it needed Saru to make decisions that he otherwise might not have made with his ganglii intact. Okay, so there's a lot of things at work. Why choose a title that is directly taken from the Bible dealing with walking through the shadow of the valley of death and I will fear no evil? Now, it could be very simplistic and just have to do with Pike and the decisions he had to make this week. But as we know, When it comes to these writers, nothing is simple.
Nothing is simple.
Nothing is simple. There's always double meanings and more substance to everything they do. Now, when we take a look at the time crystals, I have a feeling that we might, in fact, be moving into territories of existentialism and maybe even spiritualism, like what was done in Deep Space Nine.
Oh, yeah.
The questioning of existence. When you're dealing with the concept that all sentient life will be wiped out and you find out that you are essentially the product of your own demise, Section 31's creations of control, right? Or Section 31 creation of control is probably a better way of saying that. It's not hard to see the philosophical questions that are being posed.
Oh, yeah.
We are our own worst enemy. We are the cause of our own doom and destruction. And that's why I feel like it's vital at this point for the Borg, for this to be an origin story for the Borg. Imagine if we create our own destruction, Dave. Think about all of the problems in society going on today and how people always point to us, that the worst disease on this planet is mankind.
Yes.
We destroy ourselves. We destroy our world. And if we don't stop and change our ways, we will have no world. There'll be no future for our children's children, right?
Yes.
So imagine if Section 31 is the very organization that creates humanity's worst villain.
Worst villain, the Borg.
The Borg, which the Borg in itself is a very philosophical villain. The idea of losing your own individualism,
your own identity,
and becoming part of the group. I mean, we see that already today. How many problems are going on in today's world because there's a form of tribalism that has consumed American society?
Mob mentality.
Mob mentality. And the Borg, in my opinion, is more relevant as a villain in Star Trek than it ever has been. So if they were to use that, Dave, imagine that. Imagine the statement that they're making this season in that writing room, if that is in fact what they're doing.
And it gives greater substance to one of the biggest statements in Star Trek history. Is mankind worthy of going into the stars? Look what you've done.
Right back
Best of Both Worlds with Q.
No, the pilot episode.
The pilot episode, yeah. The pilot episode, TNG, is are you worthy to be out here in space? Look at the damage you've done.
Farpoint. Encounter a Farpoint.
And knowing that basically the Borg is the greatest, as we've stated, the greatest villain in Star Trek mythos that's ever been created. When you take a look at it, the greatest threat. It's very poetic that basically Q would choose that to show to Picard and say, you guys created this mess.
Exactly, David.
Are you sure you deserve to be out here? Because look at this mess you made. It sounds childish, but it's true.
I was thinking the exact same thing, because
the damage that humanity has caused, you don't deserve to be out here.
Yeah, because that's exactly right, Dave, because retrospectively, you would go back and watch TNG and suddenly Q's trial of humanity, I should say putting humanity on trial, suddenly makes that much more sense. And then
more impactful.
And then looking back at the very first episode where the Borg was officially introduced into Star Trek canon, right?
Yes.
It would make even more sense that Q showed the Borg to Picard. This is what you created. You did this. The very enemy that will threaten existence. Dude, it just makes sense on so many levels. And it just retrospectively feels seamless. It feels like it always was there. It doesn't feel like an afterthought, which is my biggest problem with prequel series. It feels like, well, let's fill in the gaps. Well, we can do this. And it just feels like a half-hearted or half-assed attempt at making something feel cool. And I'm not going to say there aren't episodes of Enterprise that didn't work like that with their own Borg episode. They didn't really expand on the mythos of the Borg. They just used elements as a way to make a fun episode, right?
Yeah.
But it didn't. And it works seamlessly, but what Discovery is doing, it feels like they're bringing all of Star Trek together.
Yes.
And I didn't realize that until the end of this episode. is not just about the obvious, the original series. Yes, they're tackling those issues more overtly because of the time span. They're a lot closer to the original series time frame, right?
Yes.
But when you look at everything they're doing, it feels very cohesive. It feels like a legitimate part of Star Trek canon. And that's why I'm totally in love with this season so far. Oh, yeah,
because like essentially this season, Discovery has become kind of like this glue and mortar that's brought all of Star Trek mythos together. It's tying into this. It's tying into this. And it's doing it seamlessly to the point where you can go back and watch it, watch those episodes, and now these episodes have more context to it.
Yep. And that's what you got to do. That's what good prequel series, prequel movies do. It adds more substance and it creates a better form of context. It helps you understand elements in an episode that you might not have picked up on before. Yeah.
Like after this, no joke, after I watched this episode, I went back and I watched The Cage and Menagerie. That gives so much more context.
I went back and watched the Star Trek porn. The porn parody. Yeah.
I don't think that works.
This one inspired me to do that. I was like, I'm going to go watch the Star Trek porn parody.
Oh, just wait till Discovery comes up with Discovery Triple X. But
listen, nothing will ever, ever be better than 7 of 69. Okay. Ever.
But then on top of that, I went back and watched Encounter at Farpoint, and that whole trial, Q points that out. And then one of the biggest questions was, why in the world does Q show Picard the Borg? Of all the things he could have shown, why does he show it? It never is answered. But because of now we're not sure yet. It's still speculation that this is the origin of the Borg episode. But if it is, imagine the context of Q showing Picard this. And as I said, Q is basically saying, look at the freaking mess you made of the galaxy.
Yeah.
You created this pest. That's what Q kind of views the Porg as, their pest.
The Porg, Dave. I think you're getting your science fiction mixed up.
But the way that he views the Borg is like this wild universe threat.
Yeah.
And Q's like looking at Picard. His first question is, are you sure humanity is ready to tackle the universe? And I'm like going, yeah, because like if you take it into context, humanity is the one who caused this mess.
Take it into account, you mean?
Take it into account.
Yeah.
It gives it so much context in that episode that, yeah, Picard doesn't know this, obviously, but we as the audience know this.
Right. And that's all that matters. They don't need to explain everything to the
characters.
The characters. In the grand scheme of things, they don't really matter when it comes to the story progression. It's about us and what it does for the audience and the overall story of Star Trek. And that's why I said last week about the Borg. Like, they don't need to be, if it ends up being the Borg, they don't need to say, oh, it's the Borg. Because I know people have screamed and yelled on top of their lungs saying, oh, there's no way this could be the Borg because the Borg was in another quadrant and they've been around for thousands of years before this time period. I'm like, yes, thank you. I'm like, are you watching this season of Star Trek or are you just following the headlines? Because you realize that Section 31 has untold technology. Right. Okay. Then we're dealing with time travel. It's not that far fetched to imagine that they can easily toss them in another quadrant.
Yep.
In some way.
Via the spore drive.
And then they get tossed back in time. That's an easy fix. It does not require a whole lot of a storytelling. All the elements they would need to do that within the last 5 minutes of, say, the season finale, it's already there.
Already there.
Yeah. All right. So let's get back to the time crystals. Besides being a pivotal plot device, it's also served as a way to explore the ideas of time and how it's perceived versus how it unfolds. That time is not linear. There are no referential points. Some theories, of course, suggest that everything in time is either connected or alternatively occurring at the same time. So basically, non-linear time is something that human beings cannot perceive because it lies outside the scope of our linear perception. I mean, isn't that part of the problem with with Spock this season before he got fixed.
Yes.
He could not understand. His brain could not make heads or tails of it.
Yeah.
And I have to believe that all of this was explored because this aspect will be vital to understanding and accepting the end outcome of this season. You can't just introduce an aspect like the time crystals and be like, yeah, we're going to use this to travel in time. And we're going to show you through a little excursion into the Klingon monastery that, hey, time is irrelevant here. It works differently. Yes, it's a cool, amazing looking scene. But as we know, in season two of Star Trek Discovery, nothing is there just because.
Yes.
There's got to be a reason as to why these crystals create. I guess I don't want to say the illusion, but they allow time to unfold differently.
Differently. Because remember, we got introduced to these time crystals even back in season one with the
Harry Mudd episode. I like flavor crystals.
with the Harry Mudd episode where he talks about the time crystal and how it creates like a pocket of its own time.
Yeah.
And likewise, with that in mind and then looking at this, it's not too far-fetched to actually think that why does time only have to be linear? And yeah, it's a very hard concept to grasp, hence why, just like what you said, is like Spock's mind broke at that point.
Yeah, but they're not making up their own, you know, scientific theories either. I mean, No. This is the idea, this theory of time and how it unfolds is very common within the scientific community.
Oh, absolutely.
They do not believe time actually unfolds linearly. To us, we perceive time as linearly, but that does not mean it actually happens that way. All right, Dave, let's go to a quick break. And then when we get back, we're going to get into some more discussions and we're going to tackle the Burnham aspects as well. We'll be right back.
Mindless automatons.
The Rain Man Show.
The Rain Man.
Apparently.
Whole fabric of society, so long as they and their weird way of doing sex is legitimized. That's what they want.
Their weird way of having sex or doing sex. I mean, gay folk, they're not aliens. They're not from Trisomian 21. They're human beings. They have sex the same way we do. They don't mind meld in order to fuck.
Now then,
they don't place their fingertips together and they're orgasming. The way these, I mean, Thomas.
Jesus, he's in the studio.
Thomas, I mean, the way the gays sign those leases for the latest Kia excursion. I mean, it's just, it's madness. The way they do those leases and buy those homes. And
you mean with the signature the same way everyone else does?
Their credit ratings are just exuberantly high for people.
From a lack of divorce?
It's true. I mean, they live a better life. They have more disposable income than the rest of us. But good golly, they're going to ruin society. If anything, we can learn a little bit about economics and the life savings from the gay community.
For more Rain Man, visit RainManShow.com.
Free stuff is awesome, but free stuff that will spice up your bedroom is even better. Just go to adamandeve.com and select almost any one item for 50% off, and then we'll load on the free stuff. Just enter this very exclusive code, RAINMAN, at checkout, and you'll get 10 tantalizing free gifts, including a sexy item for him, a special toy for her, ooh, and a third item you'll both enjoy.
Ooh.
And 6 extra special bonus items that are sure to rev your engine, pique your curiosity, and even blow you away. Plus,
free shipping!
Always sent in discreet packaging. Go to adamandeve.com now. Get 50% off, plus the 10 free gifts when you enter the exclusive offer code RAINMAN. Again, that's RAINMAN. Because without it,
no free stuff.
That's RAINMAN at adamandeve.com.
We are the Borg. Lower your shields and surrender your ships. We will add your biological and technological distinctiveness to our own. Your culture will adapt to service us. Resistance is futile.
All right, welcome back, everybody, to Star Trek From the Holodeck, the Discovery Edition. All right, so if you are looking for a way to take this show on the go because you found us on our website, you can always find us on Stitcher, iTunes, Google Play, as well as Spotify. Just search Star Trek From the Holodeck. Leave us reviews, give us thumbs up, share the show as well. And you can reach us on Facebook, facebook.com/StarTrekFromTheHolodeck, as well as Twitter @FromTheHolodeck. Communicate with us. Talk to us. Tell us you agree with us, disagree, debate. Let's have some conversations.
Communications are open.
Yes. All right. So let's talk about Burnham, Dave. So control. Obviously, there's going to be a theme here in the Borg. Let's just go with it. All right. And if the Borg ends up not being a part of this, we can just say we suck. And all of these discussions won't matter in the end. So control has deemed her a threat to their plans, and they lured her into a trap in hopes they could, I'm just going to say it, assimilate her.
Assimilate her. Yeah.
I mean, how else? There is no other way to say it. I'm going to keep using that word because that's what it is. Now, if you remember in The Next Generation, the Borg also went after Picard because why? They recognized him as a threat to their plans and success. I know there's a lot of people out there that are screaming, it can't be the Borg, as I said just a few moments ago.
Just humor us.
Wrong time, wrong quadrant. But is it really that hard to connect the dots? Everything in order for this to be believable and come true is right in front of us.
Yeah. I mean, it's just too in your face, especially with how they've portrayed the control as a character that to this point, the only thing missing this entire episode was them to say the magic phrase, resistance is futile.
Yes, Dave, because we have time travel. We have Section 31 technology. It's very easy to see how they could explain all of it away in a way that doesn't feel contrived by the end of the episode.
And I'm sorry, there's the biggest technology thing that's still out there that I think is the ultimate trump card to discovery is the spore drive. That spore drive is still there. We know it can actually jump from literally quadrant to quadrant. So what's there to say that the spore drive plays a big role in why the Borg show up or why the Borg gets jettisoned all the way out to the Delta Quadrant? I think it's the Delta Quadrant.
Yeah.
But the voice, well, even when the guy was talking, I'm sorry, that sounds exactly like the Borg. The way that he portrayed or the way that he talks to Burnham throughout the entire thing is kind of like, yeah,
Burnham. Yeah.
Is verbatim Borg. And yeah, I know this is me with my tinfoil hat on, but
no, I don't think it is anymore, Dave.
Yeah.
Just throw away the tinfoil hat. I don't think you need it.
I don't think I need the tinfoil hat anymore because it's all there.
Yeah.
It's just like when you said that all the visual cues are there.
And you mentioned about the spore drive and all of these things that are already there for us to draw conclusions. At the end of the episode, Dave, there's even more to this. Things are falling into place very nicely.
Yes.
At the end of the episode, the now emotionally broken Pike, poor guy, having faced his own mortality, decides to do what? To abandon ship and set it on self-destruct.
Yes.
This could be the moment, Dave, where the Short Treks episode, Calypso, comes into play. Instead of destroying the ship, maybe the vessel could get sent far into the future, essentially lost in time.
Because they have to figure out how to get the data away from control somehow.
Right. And if they send, think about it, if they send Discovery with the sphere's data into the future, they would send the Borg in the opposite direction, in the past, where they truly will begin to become who they will eventually be.
Exactly.
I mean, it does work. I really like the closure as well this week that they gave to Ash and Laurel, giving them that peace of mind, knowing that their son is okay and that he has found essentially a purpose. And this is where we learn just how interconnected everyone's future is. I'm going to stay away from the word fate for now, because I don't know if fate has anything to do with it at this point.
Well, because just like what you said, fate is a negative.
Yes.
Fate is a negative. At this point, we're talking about the positives, and the positives is Laurel and Ash's son. That's his destiny. That's his destiny to kind of be the I forgot what.
Dave, just look at it, for example. Okay, so his son grows up to be one of the leaders of this monastery, the very leader that would guide Pike on his journey to taking control of his destiny.
Yes.
He would be his guide as he goes down the rabbit hole. And it's just a great way, Dave, to just show how interconnected everyone is on this show. And not only that, Dave, but also all of this fixes the issues, not all of it, but almost. It fixes many of the issues we had with character development last season.
Yes.
Because of bringing Laurel back, because of bringing Ash back and giving them this child, suddenly they are now, their destinies are intertwined with the rest of our crew. And now suddenly we go back retrospectively and watch season one. We're like, okay, well, all these characters matter because they're all connected. Their intertwined futures will matter eventually in a way that will save all sentient life on Earth. Or, I'm sorry, all sentient life in the known galaxy.
In the known galaxy.
And so like, does it not fix many of those character issues we had?
Oh, absolutely. Especially in that scene when Pike gives Ash the Torchbearer insignia back and he says that your son wanted you to have this back. And it's kind of like,
It's very symbolic.
It's very symbolic because it's, in a way, it's his son telling him, I followed my destiny. It wasn't meant to be the torchbearer, but I'm sending this back to you because it's his destiny.
I would say, Dave, he was the torchbearer. I would say that his son was meant to be the true torchbearer. When you think about it, in a lot of ways, he's very messianic. The white skin, the purity. They're using messianic prophecy as a way to govern this character. And the fact that he was a spiritual character, he was in control, and he was the one that would guide Pike down existential journey.
Journey?
That's what I would say, existential journey. In a lot of ways, he is the torchbearer, but not the torchbearer for the Klingon Empire.
Yes.
But the torchbearer that would save life.
Life.
Life. And it would go back full circle to give Ash closure, Mary and Joseph, Laurel and Ash.
Yeah.
I mean, dude, maybe I'm just drawing parallels that aren't there. I'm deriving nonsense, but there's a reason why they chose the title this week.
In the shadow of darkness.
Yes, it's very biblical, and a lot of it goes right back to it. It feels like an allegory for the Messiah.
Yeah, and in a lot of ways, just like what you said, it brings closure for both Laurel and Ash because their whole history wraps around their son. It's not about their relationship.
And some hot, steamy Klingon sex, let's be honest. Yeah.
But it all wraps around their son. And when you see them realize that, oh my God, their son grew up and became kind of like this, as you said, this Messiah figure in the monastery, there's like this, suddenly like this sense of closure that you see in both characters that they're like saying, okay, he's okay. Our son's alive and he lived to be this great person. And now they have that sense of closure to move forward.
Right. Yeah. And that's why I really liked it as well, because that closure was needed for these characters. If they just would have left it as is, then you would be like, oh, well, that feels a little empty. But because they gave them closure, we now feel like we can move on. Like these characters can move on. Laurel can go do another storyline.
Exactly.
Ash can move on into Section 31 spinoff. I feel like they're closing out storylines purposely.
Yeah, closing it out and then opening new chapters for these characters.
Yeah.
That's the important part. Not just closing it off and saying, okay, they're done. Ship them off into the unknown regions. No, let's open a new chapter for them. Give them closure. And then now the question for me is, okay, Laurel is now, quote unquote, the mother of the Klingon Empire. And that's an interesting story because she has to bring the Klingon Empire together.
Dave, and again, that goes that now that I know what to look for, because I didn't know this was the direction they're going, the mother, and she's worshipped. It's not like other versions of Klingon chancellors that we've seen. And we've had female chancellors, by the way. Star Trek, I believe, The Undiscovered Country. When the chancellor is killed, his daughter takes over. Yeah, so they've never done it quite like this. The fact that they call her mother again, is a, I would say, a sign once again for the careful, attentive viewer. For example, the mother, Mary, she's revered and worshiped. Her son essentially is, I don't want to give him all the credit, the savior. Yeah, dude, there's a lot of biblical allegories going on
episode. Let's take it even further for the Klingon Empire, right? The Klingon Empire at this point is all separate. They're lost. They're in their own little tribes, kind of like in the Bible where all the Jewish tribes were all separate and needed to be brought together to create one nation.
Yeah.
Same thing with the Klingons. It's all, there's like all these biblical references that actually do make sense when you look at it.
Yeah.
But you have to actually look, I don't want to say you have to take a really deep look at it, but there, you got, you, for us, like me and you who watch these shows to see these type of tie-ins, they're there. And I think that that's a testament to the writing staff, is like they're willing to actually give it substance and not just make it, oh, make it a MacGuffin. That we won't cover this ever again. No reason. There is a reason to everything. Everything that they have done up to this point in Discovery has a point. And I give a lot of applause for the writing staff for being able to do this, because I haven't seen a series actually make every single episode that they do matter, to the point that basically, as a fan, you have to watch all these episodes to actually get an idea of what the story that they're telling is.
Yeah, and I'm going to be very ashamed to be a Star Trek fan if I go on social media at the end of the season and I see all of these people complaining still about Star Trek.
It'll be sad.
Because, dude, I have conversations with Star Trek fans a lot on social media, because we, you know, we run a pretty active Facebook page. Our Twitter, we're not on as much, but Facebook is pretty much where it's at. And we do pretty good on Instagram as well. And the, people will comment like snide remarks when I post things about Discovery. And they'll say things that clue me in to the fact that they're not even watching the show.
Yeah.
In fact, I called a guy out just a couple days ago, and he's all like, he says something that doesn't make, he said something about Discovery not making sense. And I said, well, have you watched this season, dude? Because it sounds like you watched like two or three episodes last year and that's it.
Yeah.
I'm like, quit complaining about a show that you've never watched, that you didn't actually commit to.
Quit
and give it a chance.
Quit reviewing when you haven't seen the entire narrative.
Yeah. All right. So let's move on. Even Stamets and Colbert's relationship was used to bring one of my absolute favorite characters back into the show, Jet Reno, once again showing that everybody matters in this show. Continuing with that thought, there are a few characters that we still haven't really come to know intimately as of yet, but I'm sure it's only a matter of time. But the characters that they are focusing on are intrinsic to what is happening. This is the type of development that we had, like we had this week between Colbert and Jet Reno. This is the type of development that was missing last year. Little moments like this do so much. It says so much about our characters. For example, Reno, not being much for sensitivities, finds a way to remind Colbert that he does care for Stamets, that those feelings may seem distant, but if you bring them to the surface, you might just remember why you fell in love with the dude in the first place.
Yeah.
And none of this was stated. That's my own interpretation, but you could totally see what she was doing.
Yes.
That's a great way to progress a story arc, for example, with Colbert. And of course, give us that much more on Jet Reno. It was a great moment. It almost reminded me of a Garrick moment in DS9.
He was that
character that it wasn't one for, you know, sensitivities.
Yes.
But he would find his own ways of showing he cares. And same thing with Guinan. It also felt like a Guinan moment. That moment where, you know, Guinan would slap you around. I'm like, come on, what are you doing?
Yeah, here's a drink.
Yeah. So if that's the role Jet Reno is going to play, give me more of it, please. Because she is one of my favorite characters. And I don't even want to say it's a complaint, because there's nothing to complain about when it comes to this year so far. But it is something that I, as a fan, my own fan, want. I would like to see some more Jet Reno because she is a fantastic character. And there's like this, there's this presence she has, right?
She does. When she has a very like, she eats up the scene.
Yeah, there's something about her that just captures you. The moment she walks through the door, you're like, okay, I'm going to pay attention to her. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's screen presence, which all good actors should have that. Otherwise, you're probably not going to get jobs. But there's something special about her as an actress. The what was her name? Tig? Tig Notaro? Did I say her name?
Yes, Tig, that's Notaro.
Yeah, she's fantastic. I'm hoping that she was maybe an afterthought this season because they had brought her in at the last minute. I don't know. But hopefully moving into season three, we're going to get more of her because she definitely works as a character.
She works as a character, and I think that the casting is actually was very well done in choosing her to play Tig.
Yeah.
The only question I had about this, I want to get your opinion on this.
Okay.
Stamets for me just is that character that basically needs to move on, right? I'm really worried that basically they're going to say, oh, Culber will just go back to Stamets because of these little feelings that he has for him still that make him who he is. But to me, that just ruins the whole point of the season, where for me, one of the themes of the season is about moving on, moving forward. Kind of like, yes, this happened. You can't have, you might not get what you want in the end, but you still get up and move on. And this episode, it was really weird because normally I like Stamets and I'm like going, dude, you're still pining for this.
Yeah.
After all the time that Hugh has been telling you, I'm not sure I have these feelings for you. Please give me distance. And Stamets is still like, I still love him though.
I don't know, Dave. I'm a little torn about it because they went this direction with it and they have to maintain consistency now. Otherwise, it would feel weird.
Yes.
For some reason, he doesn't have attachments to Culbert. But I think I've already stated a couple times this season that I don't care about their relationship. I just don't. Like, I care about them individually. I think they both have the potential to be fantastic Star Trek characters and possibly even Trek icons in 10, 15 years from now when we look back. We don't know.
Yeah, we don't know.
But I feel like, think about it. Let's switch the roles for a second. And I hate to bring in gender, but let's pretend Stamets was a woman.
Okay.
And her entire story arc was about her pining after her boyfriend. There would be hell to pay on social media. The woman should never just be dependent on a man. That's bad writing. A woman needs to be able to be an individual. A woman doesn't need validation. And I'm only saying that because those are the things I hear.
Yes.
And I feel like that is not just true about women. I think that's true about almost any character, whatever archetype they are. It kind of sucks sometimes when a character's sole purpose is just to push forward another character and they don't have their own story.
Piece.
Yeah. And I do agree with you. Like, I'm hoping they move past it. Honestly, I either put them together or let's move past this aspect, because it's not that it's melodrama, because it's not. I feel like it's handled maturely.
Yes.
So I don't have a problem with what they're doing. I just feel like Stamets and Culbert have the ability to be way more than just simply two characters that are going through a bad bump. They're going through bumps in their relationship.
Exactly.
And like, you bring back Culbert, right? Okay. Well, you bring him back from the dead for what? So that we can have Stamets have a weird side story that he wants to win back this character. It feels the reason why I feel like there's more to it, Dave, is because it doesn't fit everything that we're getting this season.
Exactly.
That's why it needs to turn into something. And maybe, Dave, just maybe, Culbert will get the kick in the butt that he needs, right, from Tig this week, or from Jet Reno, right? And then he finally realizes, you know what, I'm going to give Stamets a chance. And then that's when something happens, because he's not okay. There is going to be some repercussions for him coming back to life and defying death.
Yes. And that's what I hope. That's
yes,
what
I hope. I have a feeling that's what they're going to do, because this show isn't melodramatic. The Star Trek has never been melodramatic. So for them to keep using that aspect would feel insincere to Star Trek as a whole. And because these writers are in complete control this season and they are doing such a great job, I don't see them falling into that pitfall.
That pitfall, yes. Yeah. And that's why I'm like going, I was okay. I was really okay with the portrayal this week. It's just that I hope that they don't suffer the atypical pitfall that happens when writing something like
this. I just don't want relationships in Star Trek. There's a few TV series, a few Trek series that did use relationships, but for the most part, they weren't the focus.
They weren't the focus, and normally they didn't end the way that it began.
No, in fact, like I said before, in my opinion, one of the best relationships in Star Trek has been the DePaul and Tucker relationship. I felt like it worked for what they were trying to do with that show.
Yeah, you could look at a lot of the pairings, like Riker and Deanna Troi, Troi and Worf, Worf in Deep Space Nine, and you can look at that. Basically, yes, they've tackled the relationship thing, but it's been something more. It's more than just them.
Yeah.
The whole point of the relationship is to tell a bigger narrative than just simply having a happy relationship. This is what it is. Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah. All right. So let's switch gears, Dave. The visual effects and production design was some of the best this week.
Oh, it's some of the most messed up.
I mean, the rich color palette and grading was expertly done. I love the visuals of Boreth. The prosthetics. A fucked up Pike was top notch work.
Oh, I mean, I'm glad you brought that up, because that made me cringe.
It was so good. And overall, this episode is everything that Star Trek is and should be. Dave, give me your final thoughts.
My final thoughts on this episode: visually, this is one of the best episodes in the series to date. My favorite scene that we got to see was all those bodies floating in space when Burnham and Spock come out of warp, and all of a sudden they start bumping into the frozen life forms of the crew. And I'm going, that was creepy. And the visuals of that was just awesome, because that's kind of like what I would imagine what would happen if you got jettisoned into space. But the one that takes everything is the visuals on Boreth with Pike. Seeing the actual accident happen, that was intense. You know, all those explosions going on, and then you get to the all of a sudden this really quiet, very centralized corridor scene with him and his future self. And that future self, oh man, that was horrific. Especially when he's screaming and the skin starts peeling down and everything. And I'm like going, that's great visual work, but now I have nightmare fuel for the rest of my night. Thank you.
Yeah. And it definitely didn't give you good feelings.
No. But honestly, this was another strong episode for Discovery. I like the character development, especially with Pike, Burnham, pretty much everyone. I didn't have any questions except the whole Stamets-Culbert angle that was going on. I understand that that's their storyline about them possibly getting back together, but it's just like what you said. It has to actually tie in to the overall narrative.
Yeah, and I'm sure it will. Anything else?
Overall, A+. I would give it an A+ episode.
All right. Thank you, David. Also, thank you, all you wonderful listeners out there who tune in each and every week. Please help us out. You can head over to our Patreon page, patreon.com/Rainman Digital, and pledge $5 or more a month, and you gain access to a slew of content. Additional Star Trek shows, episode reviews, breakdowns, you name it, we do it. We also do pre-shows where we kind of get our fanboyisms out of the way before we start a regular show. And sometimes we get into topics that we don't fully, that doesn't fully materialize in our regular discussion. So
it's a way of you getting all the tinfoil hat ideas out of my brain before the show.
Usually, yeah. So a lot of me smacking you around, David. All right, so that concludes our show. Thank you, Dave.
Thank you. Live long and prosper.
I couldn't help but notice your pain.
My pain?
It runs deep. Share it with me.
End simulation.